Good afternoon, Hoosiers. Dr. Weaver and I are here today to give you some updates. We've had many requests for updates as to where we are with our vaccination process here in the state of Indiana. I hope I don't disappoint any of you today, but we don't have any big announcements, just a lot of really good information to share, and a plea and an ask that you help everyone that you know in your family, your friends, and your community to get out there and get vaccinated, because we're seeing such amazing results from the vaccine. We are going to provide some updates on the vaccination efforts across the state and help to encourage Hoosiers to take advantage of this opportunity to be protected against COVID-19. As of today, nearly 1.8 million Hoosiers aged 16 and older are fully vaccinated. That represents about 33% of the eligible population, and more than 4 million doses have been administered since December. Research is providing growing evidence that COVID-19 vaccines offer significant protection in real-world conditions. Studies show that individuals fully immunized, or those who are 2 weeks beyond their second dose, have a 90% decrease in getting infected with COVID-19, and that the vaccine is 99% effective at preventing severe illness and death. This further underscores the importance of everyone getting vaccinated as soon as possible. You can get your vaccine today nearly anywhere in the state. You can go online to make an appointment at rshot.in.gov, or you can just walk in. We don't want anyone to miss the opportunity to get a vaccine, so we've asked all of our clinics to administer the vaccine to anyone who walks in. We're also making both the Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson vaccines available at our two mass vaccination clinics at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and Roosevelt High School in Gary. We did this to provide Hoosiers a choice. We know that some people prefer one vaccine over the other, some want to get one shot and be done with it, while others prefer a two-dose regimen. These changes are all designed to make vaccine more accessible and to encourage people who might be hesitant to realize that they have many options. Getting vaccines in arms is more important than ever as the number of variants increase across the United States. As of today, Indiana has reported almost 1,100 variant cases. These include 823 cases of the B.1.1.7 variant, which originated in the United Kingdom and is becoming the dominant variant that we are seeing here in Indiana. 6 cases of the B.1.351 variant, which originated in South Africa, 37 cases of the P1 variant, which originated in Brazil, and 210 cases involving the variants that were first detected in California. Because these variants of concern are increasing, we will be adding a feature to our dashboard later this week that shows the percentage of samples that we sequence that have tested positive for a variant, the total number of variants identified, and a breakdown of those variants. Keep in mind that we are only able to sequence a small percentage of the thousands of samples that are submitted each week. So this part of the dashboard will only show the prevalence of variants among a small sample. As these variants have taken hold, we saw an increase in our statewide positivity rate, which rose to 5.2%, but has declined again and now stands at 4.6%. This isn't unexpected, because we know that the variants are increasing while demand for vaccine has declined. But it's important that Hoosiers do not let their guard down and that they get vaccinated if they're eligible. We continue to provide counties their color-coded maps so that they can monitor changes in COVID activity easily. You can see that the number of orange and yellow counties has increased, which reflects an increase in COVID activity in some areas of the state. Our two-score county map shows 7 counties in orange and 52 in blue, leaving 33 in yellow. Our advisory map shows 10 counties in orange and 37 in blue, leaving 45 in yellow. When cases increase, we also see an uptick in hospitalizations due to COVID. The number of people hospitalized with COVID has increased to 955 as of April 26, which is more than 50% increase from late March. It is still significantly lower than the nearly 3,500 Hoosiers who were hospitalized in late November, but we want to see this number trend back down. The number of people being admitted each day due to COVID has nearly doubled in that same time frame. While our daily admissions are still far lower than they were at the peak in November, this data point also warrants our close attention. Hoosiers, COVID is still here, and it is not going away anytime soon. Please stay vigilant. please don't let your guard down. I'd also like to provide an update on some work we're doing with schools to promote testing and vaccination. As you recall, Indiana received thousands of BioNX Now rapid testing kits, which we distributed to schools across the state. Some schools did not feel that they had the resources to do on-site testing and deferred those kits to their local health departments. But more than 160 schools are using these cards currently and are reporting results to us. As we look to the end of this school year and the start of the 2021-22 school year, we know that testing will continue to be an important part of the discussion. The federal government is encouraging testing in schools to help ensure that our students, teachers, and staff can safely return to the classroom and have a year that looks as close to normal as possible. I want to be clear about one thing. The state of Indiana has not mandated testing in schools. We have not recommended that schools do routine surveillance. We will continue to promote self-screening at home and encourage anyone who has symptoms of COVID or who has been exposed to pursue testing at one of the nearly 300 testing sites around the state. We are also working with the Indiana Department of Education to review the recent CDC guidance about school operations, and we will provide recommendations for the summer and fall 2021 session soon. I also would like to share that we've adopted the CDC's new guidance for fully vaccinated people and are following them in our long-term care facilities. Under those guidelines, fully vaccinated residents may dine and have activities without social distancing and masking. Fully vaccinated residents may have vaccinated visitors to their rooms without social distancing and masking. Fully vaccinated people do not have to wear a mask outdoors unless they are in large groups. And fully vaccinated asymptomatic people without an exposure may be exempted from routine testing. Fully vaccinated healthcare workers should still wear masks while at work. However, fully vaccinated healthcare workers may gather in break rooms and dine together without masks or social distancing. Finally, I want to share how pleased I am to see hundreds of students from Marion County sign up to receive vaccines at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this Friday. We're working with IU Health to provide a dedicated space for schools to bus students in for vaccination and have received notification to expect as many as 500 students from the varying districts and schools. I know that this was a quick turnaround for our schools at a very busy time of year, and we are excited to help protect these students. We will continue to work with schools to provide additional education and opportunities for vaccination. Reaching our young people and encouraging them to be vaccine ambassadors is the next step in our effort to put the pandemic behind us. And I'm excited to see how these students will help spread the word about these vaccines so that we can all get back to the things that we miss. Now, Dr. Weaver will provide you with an update for our vaccination efforts.
Thank you, Dr. Box. I am also encouraged to see young people start to get the vaccine. In addition to the school event at IMS, we are seeing other schools partner with local clinics to offer a vaccine to eligible students in communities that include Columbus, Batesville, Oldenburg, Milan, Jeffersonville, Vincennes, Shelbyville, and Hartford City. A huge thank you to Columbus Regional Hospital, Clark Memorial Hospital, Good Samaritan Hospital, Major, IU Blackford, and Margaret Mary Health. When we look at COVID vaccinations by age group, we see that our older Hoosiers are still leading the way in the percentage of the population vaccinated. 75% of Hoosiers age 80 and older have received or scheduled a vaccine. 79% of those ages 70 to 79 have done so. And 69% of those ages 60 to 69 have scheduled or received a vaccine. But we have a lot of work to do in our younger age groups. Only 52% of Hoosiers age 50 to 59 have scheduled a vaccine. Those numbers drop significantly as we reach younger populations, hitting just 41% for people in their 40s, 34% for individuals in their 30s, 28% for people in their 20s, and 25% for those ages 16 to 19. In total, 47.5% of eligible Hoosiers are vaccinated, in the process of being vaccinated, or have made an appointment. Today, only one-third of eligible Hoosiers are now fully vaccinated. I want to tell people who are on the fence about getting a vaccine to know that we can tell how well the vaccines work by looking at our vaccination data and information on breakthrough cases, which are those in which a fully vaccinated person is later diagnosed with COVID. We are seeing the greatest increase in cases right now among people in their 20s and 30s, where our vaccination numbers are significantly lower. Since March 1st, we saw a 130% increase in 30 to 39-year-olds and a 93% increase in the 20 to 29-year-olds, compared to a 16% increase in the 70 to 79-year-olds and a 1.6 increase in the 60 to 69-year-olds. As Dr. Box noted, our statewide hospital census has increased by more than 50% since the end of March. Since that time, we also have seen about 27,000 new COVID cases in the state. The vast, vast majority of those cases were people who were not vaccinated. Only 2.5% of those cases were considered breakthrough cases. And that is only 0.04% of everyone who is fully vaccinated that has a breakthrough case. The number of deaths has decreased significantly across all age groups in Indiana since vaccine was first made available in December. As physicians, we want to see vaccines that prevent severe illness and death. And our data show that the COVID-19 vaccines are highly successful at achieving those goals. Today, a report was released that showed from a multi-state network of U.S. hospitals during January to March of 2021, those who received the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, that it was 94% effective against COVID-19 hospitalizations among fully vaccinated adults and 64% effective among partially vaccinated adults greater than age 65. Despite this evidence, like most states, Indiana has seen demand for vaccines decline. We expected that this would happen once the pent-up demand for vaccine has been satisfied. That is why we continue to work to promote the availability of vaccine and encourage Hoosiers to take advantage of clinics that are convenient to them. We have used a number of tools to notify Hoosiers in every corner of the state about the availability of the vaccine, and we continue to work to remove any barrier that stands between an individual and this life-saving vaccine. We launched a statewide public awareness campaign in January that includes radio ads, billboards, bus wraps, commercials, and social media advertising. We also have promoted vaccine clinics around the state through direct messaging to targeted zip codes. We use this technique when we have a large number of available appointments or when we are taking mobile units into a new community. This helps provide real-time awareness to people who might not see a press release or a social media announcement. We also have used the integrated public safety and awareness system that is operated by FEMA to promote the availability of vaccine at our two mass vaccination clinics at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and at Roosevelt High School in Gary. This system sends an alert to designated mobile phones. Last week, we sent an alert to residents in Gary and the surrounding areas to make them aware of vaccination opportunities at the Roosevelt High School site. The number of vaccination appointments at the site more than doubled last weekend as a result of that notification. On Tuesday, we used the same system to send a public health alert to Marion County and its surrounding counties to help increase appointments at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Mass Vaccination Clinic. We wanted to ensure Hoosiers in central Indiana that they knew that both the Pfizer and the Johnson & Johnson vaccines were available and that no appointments were needed. There are many people, including vulnerable populations, who would otherwise not be aware of the opportunity to get vaccinated. We have been told that the alert was the first time that they are aware of our mass vaccination clinics. And we saw the number of people double at both sites after the alert went out. Yesterday alone, more than 1,000 people came to IMS when we had seen the numbers decreasing in the previous days. We also doubled our appointments for today. And we have reports this morning of steady walk-in traffic. The process potentially saved hundreds of lives. The public alert system is a valuable tool that we will use judiciously to make Hoosiers aware of important health issues. We do not take its use lightly, which is why it is used sparingly while we give our other messaging a chance to work. Our 211 partners are also calling people in 44 counties where we have seen a lower uptake to encourage them to sign up for vaccine. When people aren't interested in signing up, the team tries to gather more information about why so that they can provide accurate information. Some of the reasons we continue to hear are that I've had COVID and I don't need the vaccine. This isn't true because we still don't know how long antibodies from COVID last, but we see that only about 36% of people who have had COVID have received a vaccine to date. I want to encourage the more than 700,000 Hoosiers who have had COVID to strongly consider getting vaccinated. We also hear people say, I am perfectly healthy. This is also a false sense of security. Even perfectly healthy people do get COVID, and it can have severe outcomes for anyone. And we also lastly hear, I don't trust the vaccine, and more research is needed. To that, I say that all three vaccines have been studied extensively and have been shown to be extremely safe and effective. We will continue our efforts to increase access to vaccine regardless of where you are located. We have more than 1,600 Hoosiers who are unable to leave their homes to get vaccinated through the Homebound Hoosiers program and have partnered with Lyft and Uber to provide free transportation to vaccine clinics across the state. In Gary, we partnered with the public transit system to provide free bus rides to individuals to go get vaccinated at the Roosevelt site. And we continue to partner with employers, universities, and community partners to bring vaccine to Hoosiers where they live and work. I want to remind Hoosiers that our mass vaccination clinic in Gary runs until June 2nd, and that we will be at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway today through Friday. We are promoting Friday as a family day for parents to bring their 16 and 17-year-olds to get Pfizer. IU will have members of its Riley team there, and as Dr. Vox mentioned, the schools will also be bringing their students. We'll be offering both Johnson & Johnson and the Pfizer vaccine all 3 days this week. We also have added vaccination clinics in May at IMS on May 10th, 17th, and 24th, so we hope that many more people will take advantage of this unique opportunity to protect themselves from COVID-19. Finally, I want to talk about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. We are very excited to get the news that the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and the CDC had lifted their pause on the J&J vaccine after rare blood clotting disorders were identified in a few patients. This pause allowed federal experts to more closely review this extremely rare condition. It has a risk of 7 cases per 1 million vaccinated for women who are between the ages of 18 and 49 years old. For women over 50 and men of all ages, this adverse event is even more rare at less than 1 per million. This review shows that the safety measures in place work, and it allowed time to educate both patients and providers about the symptoms for what they should look for and ensure that anyone who presented with this very rare side effect could be treated properly. Every individual can have a unique response to a vaccine. It is heartbreaking to hear that 3 women died of this rare clotting disorder, but it is important to recognize that this brief pause in the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine signals that federal officials take vaccine safety very seriously. The CDC and ACIP have stated their firm confidence in resuming the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and we are confident in resuming it here in Indiana. While we know that some people might prefer one vaccine over the other, we continue to believe that for the majority of people, the best vaccine is the one that you can get in your arm today.
Thanks, Lindsay. I think, you know, just to put it in perspective, those women that are, you know, age 18 to 49 have a risk of 7 per 1 million, you said, right, of getting these very serious blood clots at the base of their brain. But if you just get infected with COVID, your risk is 165,000 in a million that you could get blood clots. So much, much higher than getting the vaccine.
Absolutely. When the ACIP reviewed the data, it was by far clear that the benefits of getting vaccinated way outweigh the risk from this very rare event. So we were really happy to start using it here in Indiana again.
All right. Thanks. We'll go to Jenny now for questions.
Okay, please remember to unmute your own microphones. Our first question will come from Eric Berman of WIBC.
Hi, Dr. Box, Dr. Weaver. Good to see you again. I hope to see you again soon. I know you've said in the past, Dr. Box, that the department studies what prevents people from getting the vaccine. I'm curious what the prevalence is of vaccine hesitancy versus what Dr. Weaver described of, I just don't feel like I need it, versus I'd like to get it, but I have barriers. And for that first group, the first two groups, the people who either don't trust or don't want the vaccine, what specifically is the state doing to address that?
So, you know, we knew this time would come when it would be much more supply than we had individuals who are interested in getting the vaccine. And we knew that it would, especially for that group of people, that 20 to 30% that in every survey has said, I'm not getting the vaccine, I'm not interested. That's really just about having a conversation with them. And that's about individuals who care about them, whether they work with them, whether they're part of their family, you know, part of their community, part of their church, you know, kind of investigating with them what it is that keeps them from getting the vaccine. And I think that conversation may include education, but the education's been out there. I know that they've had a chance to read it. I know that they have lots of options to go and get that information. There's another 20 or 30% that we find that are just kind of like, well, maybe I'll get it, maybe I won't. Depends on if I have time, depends on how convenient it is. Maybe it's young, you know, the youth that were finishing up finals and other things and didn't want to run the risk of not feeling good during that time. And that's a group that we can very much influence. And part of that is making it very accessible to people. And that's why Dr. Weaver and the group at the Department of Health and all of our sites have encouraged everyone to take walk-ins so that there's really no excuse. When that individual makes the decision, comes to that point in their life where they're ready to do it, that they don't go to a site and get turned down and try to get scheduled the next day or later that same day, because we don't know that we'll get that next opportunity. Lindsay, what would you like to add? There's so many things we're doing in this.
Yeah, space. I think right now it's really every vaccine counts, right? So we look at everything as a win. I know we would love to see 6,000 people a day out at IMS, but the fact that we had 1,000 more people show up who we weren't expecting yesterday is a really huge win.
It appears that the brunt of the yellow and orange counties are here on the north end of the state, going about two counties deep off the northern border. Specifically, Northeast Indiana, where we are, is one of the orangest areas of the state this week. So I was wondering if you guys had any explanation for what maybe is the issue with the north region as compared to the other state, which other parts of the state, which is mostly blue at this point.
So I would probably tend to lean toward the fact that we know that Michigan has had a significantly high proportion of the variant, the B.1.1.7 variant, probably the highest in the nation. And that is one of the most transmissible strains that there is. And I always laugh up in Gary when we were doing so many immunizations for the state of Illinois. And I'm always like, well, the virus does not respect state lines. It doesn't respect county or zip code lines. So, you know, I'm sure that that is very much contributing. There's a lot of back and forth with work and with pleasure and other things that people do. So I'm sure that's contributing. And I do know that they have had increased hospitalizations up there. Although they're holding their own, their hospitalizations are still only about a third of what they were in November, but that still seems like a lot to them. So we're working with them to make sure that they have access to all the vaccine they need and all the manpower they need to get vaccine into arms.
I think I would just add that we've seen this before where certain parts of the state have had an increase in cases only for it to come to other parts of the state. So just because you're in a part of Indiana that doesn't border Michigan, I wouldn't think that you're in the clear. So we'll be paying really close attention to that.
Our next question is from Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette.
Hello, good to see you all.
Hi, Nikki.
Quick questions. First of all, do we have any idea what percent of the breakthrough cases are different variants? And secondly, you mentioned working on removing barriers to having doctors be able to give it in their offices. What are those barriers? Because I know so many people who would get it if they were able to have a conversation with their doctor, someone they have an established relationship with. So when are you hoping that can occur?
So I'm going to let Dr. Weaver answer the second one. The first one, I do know that federally and across the nation, they have looked at breakthrough cases to determine if it's one particular variant. There are a high percentage of variants, but there are a lot of just the wild type too. So there are oftentimes, you know, individuals that are more elderly and individuals that have been vaccinated a while ago. They're very uncommon. I think the number that Dr. Weaver gave us was 0.04% of those who are fully immunized will have or have had a breakthrough case. So in infinitely small numbers, the state of Indiana is asking all of our hospital practitioners if they have new cases admitted to the hospital of COVID-19 that we sequence all those individuals and specifically those individuals that have been fully vaccinated or have a repeat case. They may not have been vaccinated, but they were ill 4 months ago or 3 months ago. Lindsay, do you want to answer the other question?
Yeah. So the barriers that for getting the vaccine to the primary care providers are the same things that have made these vaccines difficult from the very beginning. It is storage and handling and the fact that they're multi-dose vials. So if I am a primary care provider, I likely don't have that ultra cold storage. I mean, a lot of our hospitals didn't have ultra cold storage and we had to find ways to be able to provide that in order to hold Pfizer. And the vaccines still come in very large shipments of anywhere from 100 to 1,000 doses. Plus it comes with anywhere from 5 5 to now all the way up to 14 doses in a vial, which makes it difficult. So if you're only seeing a couple of patients that day who need to get vaccinated, you worry about wastage. So we're seeing what we can do to help break down the amount of vaccine that we send to places, looking at ideas for a hub and spoke model where we're holding vaccine in one central location that primary care providers can access. And we have asked all of our hospital systems who we know have outpatient clinics to help work and start to figure out a way to get the vaccine out there.
The next question is from Meredith Hackler at WLFI.
Meredith?
Good afternoon, ladies. How are you doing?
We're doing well. How about you?
Not too bad. So I have a couple of questions. So you mentioned Michigan earlier, and I was listening to a report earlier that says Michigan has been seeing a huge increase of younger people being ventilated, some even as young as 2-3 years old, and they have had the variant. Is that anything that we're seeing here? And then I was also wondering if you could elaborate on the free transportation for Uber and Lyft. I was wondering if you could kind of go into details about where that service is available, if it's only certain parts of the state, or if it's available all over Indiana.
Absolutely. You know, when we first started talking about the B.1.1.7 variant, we said it's much more transmissible, you know, 1.5 times more transmissible, so easier to get infect other individuals. We didn't really think that there was an increased severity of cases, but really the studies are showing that there probably is an increased severity in those cases. The fact that we are seeing more younger people right now in the hospitals with this is because they're the ones they've not had access to the vaccine. And of course, our little ones don't have access and won't have access for quite a while. So that's why it's really important that all of us that surround them, whether we're in school with them or daycare with them, or, you know, they're in our own home or they're part of our family that will be celebrating with us over Memorial Day. If you're vaccinated, that's the way to help protect them until they can be vaccinated. I think that we'll know when we start to see the cases go down and stay down. I don't think that we're there yet. We've got to get quite a bit more, but certainly our goal is well above 60%. Lindsay, you want to weigh in?
I agree. I want everyone to get vaccinated. I'm always taught, and I teach my residents and students when I talk to them, that the most important patient is a person in front of you. Even if we have 70% of people vaccinated, but still people are dying, that means a lot to that person, of course, and their loved one. So we're going to just keep on going, keep on educating and doing everything we can to get as many people vaccinated. I think there was a second question.
Yes. The other question is about, you said that appointments had doubled at IMS and you had 1,000 more people than you expected yesterday. How many people have you been getting there, and what's the appointment rate that you have at that clinic now? And same with how things have been going statewide as far as appointments. Have those been changing much in recent days?
So we've seen the number of appointments decline with each passing week in general for the past couple of weeks with vaccines across the state. I'm seeing more and more open and available appointments. And in IMS, we saw those numbers as we started the week that they went down slowly throughout the week. So we are doing just under 1,000 is what we are expecting today and tomorrow. But like I said, we're adding appointments a lot because thanks to the alert yesterday and all the other advertising that we've been trying to do. And then almost 2,000 on Friday is what's expected right now.
The next question is from Kathy with the Ferdinand News.
Hi, Kathy.
Hello. Good to see you both. I have one question about kids and then kind of another question. Do you anticipate this same vaccine being used on smaller children? You know, I worry, for example, about my grandkids who can't get a vaccine because they're under 16. Do you think that will come, or that it will be a variant of that?
So I do believe that Pfizer, they've already asked for an extension of their EUA or emergency use authorization down to the age of 12 through 15-year-olds. So I do believe that the ACIP plans to act on that. We've been told early to mid-May. So we're hoping that we're going to get the 12 and above, so 12 to 18-year-olds in the school setting vaccinated over the summertime. With regards to the elementary kids, the last that I heard was that might be the first of the year. So we really need to protect everyone around those children because they just do not have the ability, nor do our newborn infants have the ability to be vaccinated for this. Do you have another question too, Kathy? Did we lose her? Kathy?
Oh, sorry about that. They muted me again. And
I'm sorry.
No problem.
We got a novice over there on the board today.
I was curious, because this vaccine is different, or the way it works is completely different than previous vaccines and what we've been doing, you know, since I got my polio vaccine or smallpox vaccine. Does this look like the future for other kinds of vaccines, like the flu and things like that? I know everybody's concentrating on COVID, but are they looking at that for other things?
100% sure that they are, although I haven't had time to read about that. But I think that this technology has opened a new door to vaccinations and potentially making vaccinations, you know, the fact that we can actually produce them much more quickly. We don't have to wait to grow them and hope that we grow the right strains and the right immunizations against those strains. So I think that this is, you know, if we try to make some lemonade out of the lemons associated with this COVID vaccine or COVID-19 pandemic, it would be that new technology has arisen from this and it's going to make a huge difference.
The next question is from Whitney Downer to CNHI.
Good afternoon. I've got two questions. My first question is whether or not any counties or vaccination sites have rejected doses or asked for a significantly decreased allotment because they're just not using it. And if you're seeing more waste because people are not demanding the vaccines as much.
Great questions. I'll let Lindsay answer those.
Yes. Yeah, so we are sending less vaccine or allocating less vaccine because we want to supply what the need is. We don't want vaccine to get wasted. It does start a time when it goes out to locations and in which you have to use it by. And so we are not going to be pulling down everything that we have available to us and making sure that we have a place for it, use for it, and that we can use it now. So we will see our mass vaccine clinics start to wind down over the next month or so, and some of them will even start to close. And like I said, but we're in the process of moving it to other locations. So we did the universities, business and industry, and also our primary care offices. So just moving it around to different directions. And also all of our pharmacies are offering vaccine now too across the state. So just kind of it'll look different, but definitely less. And we fully recognize that there's going to unfortunately be waste now. If someone is there in front of a vaccinator, we want them to give them the vaccine. And so we recognize that maybe at the end of the day, when they have, you know, if it's a Moderna vial and they have four extra doses in there, everyone who has had the opportunity to get vaccinated. So it's very hard to find four more people to get that vaccine. And so unfortunately, there is going to be some waste, but still ask that everybody does everything that they can. I know, for example, at IMS, they are down to that last vial. They're running those, those vaccines in between different the different garages and make sure that they have the least minimal waste as possible. And I know all of our vaccine sites are doing that right now.
Next question is from Darius Johnson of Fox 59.
Hello, Darius.
Darius, you should be able to talk now.
Good afternoon, ladies. How are you?
Great. Good. How are you?
Good. Forgive me. I believe you may have went over some of this already, but I want to know, you know, will it become mandatory at any point for these clinics to start doing walk-ins? And how soon are you all wanting to have these primary care offices doing these vaccinations during routine appointments?
We try to stay away from mandating things like mandatory that you have walk-ins, but we have really had great discussions with our partners across the state and the importance of why we need to have walk-ins and walk-ups at different times. And, you know, it's hard to go from that mindset, as Lindsay says, of doing 3,000 a day or 6,000 a day and the large mass vaccine sites to now, hey, we know we wanted to do 600, but there's only 60 scheduled, but those 60 people, you know, deserve to be protected and deserve to have a decreased risk of becoming severely ill or dying from COVID-19. So it is a change in the mindset. And really, I think most of our partners have been taking us up on the walk-in
Yeah, I will say some of our sites still have appointments fully booked for the next couple of weeks. So they might be the ones that are a little bit more resistant to doing that right now because they see a full schedule ahead of them. But almost everyone that we've asked said absolutely and are taking walk-ins. And that really means a lot to people who are had difficulty trying to plan ahead and schedule, that they know that they can just show up, you know, on a lunch break or right after work or whatever that might mean to get their vaccine. And what was the second question?
Darius, what was your second question?
The second one was talking about, you know, is there a certain goal or a date as far as having these primary care offices doing these vaccinations during routine appointments? Do you have a goal in mind?
So we already are working with some to get vaccine to them. So that process has already started, and we're going to continue to expand that over, you know, throughout the month of May to get it out to primary care locations. So that process is rolling, and we're really excited about it because, like we said, there are definitely people who that is where they want to get it, and so we need to get the vaccine there.
Next question is from Sherry at the Indy Star.
Hi, thank you for doing this. I have two quick nuts and bolts questions and then one broader question. The first two questions are, when Pfizer becomes approved, for 12 to 16 year olds, do you see them still needing to be vaccinated through these vaccination clinics, or are there going to be other places where they're getting vaccinated at least over the summer? And the May dates at the IMS, are those both for first and second shots? For folks? And then the third question would be,
right.
What happens if we don't get much above 50%? What do you see happening in the coming half year as, you know, as we kind of muddle through life with the virus and half of us vaccinated? Thank you.
I think with regards to the kids, the 12 to 15 year olds, and even our 16 to 18 year olds that haven't had that much of a chance yet to get vaccinated, providers are really key, especially our pediatric and our family doctor providers for the kids. But we will be working with the school systems to set up vaccine sites so that we can make sure that over the summertime that there will be opportunities for families to bring the kids and get them vaccinated. The May dates at IMS, you know, if someone shows up and it's supposed to be a second Pfizer day, a second dose for Pfizer day, and somebody needs their first dose or wants a J&J, they're going to get it because we're not going to turn anybody down. We want to get people protected. Even one dose has some good protection, but we will definitely work to get that second dose scheduled for them because there still are a lot of convenient sites to get that accomplished. And the last one, Lindsay?
If we only get 50% of people who are vaccinated.
I'll let you answer that one.
So what are we expecting in the fall? I mean, what the CDC has been talking about, and we've heard other experts say that they are concerned about another large spike in the fall. So if you have not been vaccinated, then of course your risk of getting sick, being hospitalized, and even dying is much higher than the people who have been vaccinated. So I don't want people to have to learn their lesson from seeing a family member get sick. And so we're going to continue to work over the summer and find every opportunity that we can to get people vaccinated.
Yeah, I do know from talking to providers, I know Lindsay's in the emergency room, and Dr. Sullivan, Dr. Dan, the most heartbreaking thing is to have people come in severely ill and die from COVID when we know the opportunity was there for them to get vaccinated. That's almost harder than not having the vaccine, you know, the fact that it's there. So we want everyone vaccinated.
Our next question is from Rob Burgess of the Wabash Plain Dealer.
Good afternoon, Rob.
Good afternoon. How are you guys today?
We're great. Thank you.
Great. I wanted to see if you had any opinion on Senate Bill 5, which would restrict local health departments' ability to issue mandates. And then my second question was, what can you say to the folks who are getting their first Moderna or Pfizer shot but are hesitant to get their second shot because they've heard that's when people see the most reactions?
I'll let Lindsay answer the second one. And then the first one I think is really up to the governor's office. But what I would say about that is that over this past 14 months, Dr. Weaver and I have had the opportunity to work with many communities and many counties across the state of Indiana. And it always worked the best when the local elected officials, the county commissioners, the elected mayors, the local public health officer and the administration in their office with the public health nurse and the hospital systems were working together for the good of the community. And that's what we need to continue to support here in the state.
people who are hesitant to get their second dose, I get it. We do see more side effects after you get that second dose. My advice and what I've told my friends and family is just plan for it. Plan to not feel so great that next day. Make it a day where you just hang out on the couch and watch movies, take some ibuprofen, drink lots of fluid, and then you're done. Ultimately, it is way better than having COVID. It is way better than being hospitalized. And it's worth it because, you know, when you have those small reactions, that means that the vaccine is working. So my advice is to just do it. It gets you to that 95% effective rate. That's really what gets you to that high number. And what we've seen here in Indiana and nationally is that it's even higher than that of preventing you from getting COVID.
Next question is from Abdul Hakim Shabazz of Indie Politics.
Good afternoon, Abdul.
Good afternoon, Dr. Weaver. Good afternoon, Dr. Box. Two questions. Number one, in the hospitalizations, do we have sort of an age bracket as to who has actually been hospitalized or is in the hospital due to COVID-19? And my second question is sort of based on our immunization rates and all the other data, do you think we'll ever get to herd immunity in Indiana, maybe sometime this year?
So I'll answer the first one and let Dr. Weaver think about the second one a little bit. The first one, yes, we have looked at our hospitalizations, and it's clear that it's the bulk of those hospitalizations are in our more elderly population, so the 60 and above age group. But we definitely do have many individuals in the younger age groups too. So I think it's important for everyone to understand that not only can you have consequences like hospitalizations when you're young and healthy, but we are also seeing significant long-term complications with people that are not even hospitalized with COVID. In fact, there was a recent study out that showed that about 66% of individuals that had COVID but were not hospitalized in that next 4 to 6 weeks still had another follow-up appointment or more appointments with a new diagnosis and oftentimes a subspecialist like a cardiologist or a gastroenterologist or someone for their lungs. So it's not clear that it's only going to be the people that have the severe cases and are hospitalized that have long-term complications with COVID. Lindsay, you want
to? I think we absolutely have the opportunity to getting to herd immunity in Indiana this year. I mean, I think there, you know, of course, a lot of questions about what does that number, what is that percentage, what does that really look like? But we fully believe that vaccines are working in Indiana right now. And that is why our hospitalizations, while they have increased, are manageable and our deaths have not really skyrocketed. And we do feel like it's kept our cases under control as well. I mean, all the evidence goes back to that. When we look at the people who have been hospitalized and how many cases we've had there compared to people who, cases and compared to who have had vaccines and not had vaccines. So it is clearly working and we just need to keep on.
Next question is from Natalie at WANE.
Natalie?
Natalie, you need to unmute your own microphone. Okay, we'll come back to Natalie. Next question, John Russell, Indianapolis Business Journal.
John?
Hi. Yes, thank you. So despite all the efforts you're taking with the mass vaccination clinics and the walk-in appointments, it looks like Indiana is still ranking pretty low among states for the percentage of population fully vaccinated. According to the CDC's vaccine data tracker, Indiana ranks 45th out of 50 states at for that figure. So what is the unique challenge here compared to why are 44 other states doing better than we are?
Lindsay, do you want to answer that? I know you look at the COVID tracker. It's oftentimes very behind where the actual vaccination rate is for our state.
Yes, it is. But I will say we know that we have lots of work to do here in Indiana. We're, you know, trying to do everything we can, like I said, to get vaccine out, to look at different avenues, to continue the conversation, to continue education. We just, I mean, I think the bottom line is we have a lot of work to do. And really, I think it's all of our individual responsibilities to help, you know, talk to others, encourage others. I know people at, you know, small dinner parties that have convinced other people at the dinner parties to go ahead and sign up and get vaccinated. So honestly, at this point, it's whatever it takes. So we're trying to do everything we can, and we're working with partners to figure out, you know, what can they also do to help increase our vaccination rates?
I would say that another area that we see significant low percentages of individuals that are fully vaccinated or even partially vaccinated are in our rural areas. Mm-hmm. And so we are working with the Rural Health Association, with Purdue Extensions and Farm Bureau to determine how we can work together to increase that vaccination rate in our rural population.
Our next question is from Rich Nye of WTHR.
Thank you. We've heard so much about masks. We got new guidance from the CDC yesterday. Can you address that? You did a little bit already, but can you address why someone who's been fully vaccinated and has this vaccine that's so effective might still have to or might should still wear a mask at some point?
I think it's an excellent question. And I think that we are approaching a time when that is definitely going to be changing. Right now, we have to remember, I am in Marion County on a regular basis. I live here and work here, and we're under a mandate, and I will continue to follow that. Our state government still has a mask mandate for that. And we have to remember that we do only have fully vaccinated 1.8 million of our currently eligible Hoosiers vaccinated. So we just started on March the 31st, opening up to everybody that's eligible in the state, which is 16 and above, and really just, you know, need to give them time and everyone time to be able to be vaccinated if they want to be vaccinated.
So I am a risk to, even though if I'm fully vaccinated, I'm a risk to people who aren't vaccinated?
You know, again, it's, I think the CDC did a good job of saying if you are outside and you're with people that are vaccinated and you're not in large groups of people where there's going to be a larger number of people who are not vaccinated, that it is really fine to have your masks off. It is fine to have your mask off when you're at home with a group of vaccinated people. I will have individuals over from my family for Memorial Day this year, and I've been checking with every single person, are you fully vaccinated? And they know that's the goal, and they will all be fully vaccinated by that time. So I think it's really just a question of respecting those individuals that may still need a little bit more time to get this vaccine completed and be there 2 weeks beyond the vaccine.
I wanted to ask about, I mean, there is a pretty obvious correlation between vaccine access and vaccine and vaccinated population, just kind of comparing the zip code data and the vaccine clinics map. There a lot of the areas of the state that have fewer than 20% of the population vaccinated are in areas that don't have vaccine clinics. So I was curious if there were future plans for more mobile clinics. Are you relying predominantly on primary care providers, especially in light of Indiana's uninsured population and our general inability to lack of primary care providers for folks.
I think you have to remember that all the vaccine sites may not be on our maps. Okay. That there may be many pharmacies that are not actually on there. And so we have been very, very careful to be very picky in where we put vaccine clinics, and the mobile units are a big part of that and will continue to be a big part of that. As we look at a map on a weekly basis, it gets updated. We know exactly where the lowest uptake is in every county across the entire state and target those areas specifically. And many of them are in our rural areas, which I believe truly has a little bit more to do with vaccine hesitancy than it has to do with the access there. But I always say you can't say it's about vaccine hesitancy until you've made sure that you've made the access appropriate. And there was another question too.
About the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
Oh, yeah.
So,
why don't you
so
answer that?
Yes, people who have the Johnson & Johnson, of course, you know, they paused so they weren't putting it in arms for those 11 days, but were immediately fine to go ahead and use the Johnson & Johnson, of course, with the warning for women who are 50 and younger. But I will tell you, we're not getting large shipments of Johnson & Johnson right now. So it is not in some kind of vast supply across the state. But as we start to see more, we'll continue to spread it out more and more. And I will say we do use our mobile units to help access different parts of the of Indiana. And we pay attention to what uptake is and how available appointments are. But it's only sites who are willing to take walk-ins, or not walk-ins, but people who are willing to take appointments from the public that are on our website. So there's lots of places that are, you know, they have have direct relationships with their patients, or if it's a pharmacy with their community. And so that may not be on our website, but we do pay attention to all those numbers and make sure that we're making access very easy and accessible.
And you did specifically mention providers, and honestly, mm-hmm. Dr. Weaver and her team have made it very clear to providers right now, you can become a vaccine provider for COVID-19 vaccine, and we can make sure that you request and get shipped the vaccine that you want. So there is definitely the ability to ship not Johnson & Johnson, because we don't have enough of it right now, but Pfizer or Moderna.
Our final question is from Lee Kelso of Health Call Live Radio Hour.
Thank you, everyone. Question is, I know that we no longer have a mandated mask rule for the state of Indiana, yet many businesses still require masks to enter their premises. It is their right. I understand that. What is your counsel to those business owners on when they should either shift to recommended or remove that requirement entirely? Is there a metric they should observe? Where do they look for guidance?
So I think that's a really excellent question, and I'll let Dr. Weaver weigh in too. But I think that part of that's going to be, you know, toward the end of May, we will have had a good 2 months of ability for people, anyone that wants to get vaccinated, to be able to be vaccinated and be fully vaccinated. But I do think that there may be some business owners that actually have employees or a clientele that's particularly at increased risk if they would get COVID and may not be able to be vaccinated, that will continue to ask for masks to be worn in their facilities. And I think until we get further into this, that's a very reasonable thing. In fact, I will become a mask wearer probably in the fall, around the time when influenza becomes a big problem when I go to different areas, because it has really made such a difference this year in our influenza cases and our RSV cases. Lindsay, do you?
I agree with you. I'm very data driven, and I've also learned not to make too many predictions with this pandemic. I think we all have, but I think data will show. And as the CDC has continued to come out and update their guidance around masks, I expect for them to do so. I mean, we're very excited with what we've seen, vaccines and how it has decreased our cases and our hospitalizations and our deaths, and expect for that to continue more over the next couple of weeks and months. And then as we see that good news, which is what we expect, then we'll start to see less and less requirements around mask use.
That concludes today's briefing. Thank you all for joining.